818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. The time now is 1 p.m.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Middle East in Focus. As Laura Krafchowitz wrote this month at Literary Hub about the appointment of Barry Weiss as the first ever editor-in-chief of CBS News, quote, Weiss's entree into the public sphere was trying to ruin Arab and Muslim professors' careers. In 2003, Barry Weiss, then an undergrad at Columbia University, tried to get Palestinian-American historian Joseph Mossad fired, along with several of his colleagues, end quote. That would be the first of many smear campaigns helmed by Weiss as an activist with organizations including the David Project and her own Colombians for Academic Freedom. In 2017, after becoming an unofficial spokeswoman of the Jewish American right, Weiss was hired by the New York Times during Trump's first term as a gesture to quote-unquote ideological DEI. She left the Times in a huff 3 years later, posting a dramatic goodbye note, lashing out at the paper, Twitter, and the media, arguing that she was bullied, likely due to her widespread unpopularity among her colleagues, who didn't shy away from using social media to express their opposition to her fiercely Zionist views, criticized by some as racist. Weiss actually left the Times to lead the startup University of Austin, as Krafchowitz wrote, quote, an anti-woke university mired in controversy and resignations. On October 6, the same day Weiss was announced as editor-in-chief of CBS News by its new parent company, Skydance Media, Skydance also announced the purchase of Weiss's anti-woke platform, The Free Press, for an unfathomable $150 million, widely seen as part of the Trump-aligned takeover of legacy media. Tragically, some believe tweets by Barry Weiss, posted at the start of the genocide in Gaza, put a target on Palestinian professor, writer, poet, and activist Rifat Alarir just weeks after Weiss began posting about him. He was killed by an Israeli missile strike on his brother's home on December 6, 2023 in northern Gaza. With us today to discuss her essay at Literary Hub, examining the fault lines and false choices of liberal Judaism, her experience growing up 5 minutes away from Barry Weiss in Squirrel Hill, the center of Jewish life in Pittsburgh, and how Barry Weiss became, quote, the most upwardly mobile Jew since Moses, end quote, is writer and activist Laura Krafchowitz. Laura Krafchowitz is a writer and activist whose writing has appeared at Literary Hub, The Kenyon Review, Hayden's Ferry Review, The Evergreen Review, and The Foreword, among other outlets. She's an organizer with Jewish Voice for Peace Detroit and is the co-founder of City of Asylum Detroit, a nonprofit that provides safe haven fellowships to writers and artists who are in exile under threat of persecution. It is my pleasure to welcome Laura Krafchowitz to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you so much for having me, Esty.
I was so intrigued by your essay, Laura. You write in it about growing up in Squirrel Hill, along with Barry Weiss, but your families belonging to quite different congregations. You describe yours as a hippie havara founded by liberal academics that you took great pride in. Can you tell us about your congregation and what about it and its place in the community gave you that pride?
Thank you so much for having me, Esty, and thanks for that great question. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about my upbringing in Squirrel Hill and in Pittsburgh, you know, as I've written this article and certainly before then. I grew up in a really close, very thriving Jewish community. Squirrel Hill is a really walkable neighborhood in the east side of Pittsburgh that is 40% Jewish. It has 35 congregations. It is widely considered one of the epicenters of Jewish life, not only in Pittsburgh, but in the U.S. So I really grew up in many ways a privileged existence where I never really felt like being Jewish made me the outsider in any sort of context. The only way in which I felt like an outsider as a Jew, weirdly, was within my own community. Because in Pittsburgh, of the 35 congregations that are there, only one is Reconstructionist, like the one that I grew up in, Dor Chadash, which means new generation in Hebrew. Many of the synagogues that I went to just for other friends' bat mitzvahs or bar mitzvahs or what have you, they would have these, like, in the lobby, you would see these, like, leaves with donor names. In the sanctuary, you would have these, like, gigantic stained glass windows going from floor to ceiling. And you'd have, like, these built-in seats, you know, with really amazing, you know, you felt like you were in a theater. Sometimes if you were in a Reform congregation, there was, like, an organ and a choir. And I have to say that I always felt a little bit outside of things in those congregations and in those synagogues, because my congregation couldn't have been any more different. It was, as you say, a hippie chavura, meaning we were literally had been founded by a group of friends and colleagues who did not want to be in a place that had a rabbi, certainly not a male rabbi. Certainly not in an institutionalized version of a religion that they believed would be better expressed through participation. And so they founded Dor Chadash. They did not have a synagogue, and they still don't, as a matter of principle. They recently added rabbis, a couple of women, but until very recently, in the last few years, they were aggressively anti-rabbi. And in fact, I remember, and I have had this confirmed by, but when I was a kid, I remember that occasionally they would, like, once or twice a year, invite a visiting rabbi to, like, speak, do a Torah talk. And inevitably, the founders of the congregation would, like, sit in the front row and wait for their chance to ask these, like, antagonizing questions. And I thought I made that up. And then I spoke with a woman who I do consider my rabbi, who said, oh, yeah, no, this is true about your congregation. She said, I was a rabbinical student at the time and visited your congregation. That was 100% my experience. So it was this anti-authoritarian, very feminist, very open, very participatory, in many ways, very utopian feeling congregation in the middle of sort of a sea of these very institutionalized, very moneyed spaces.
You also write about the different directions that your activism and Barry Weiss's activism took. Even as you both attended Palestine Solidarity Conferences, you note her founding of The Current, a student-run Jewish affairs journal at college, and her first widely read piece, Lessons from the Palestine Solidarity Movement. Can you tell us about the takeaways from that conference that Barry wrote about briefly?
Yeah, it's so funny to reread her article, which I've read a number of times, because what always pops out at me is the way messaging really is the problem for her. She writes about how basically that the Palestine Solidarity Movement had better messaging than the Zionists personified in her piece by the JDL, the Jewish Defense League, which is widely known as a hate group, you know, which advocates openly to complete the expulsion of Palestinians from their land in order to have a purely Jewish state. So what really strikes me is that her problem is never the disparity between the values of a movement advocating for equal rights to live on the land and for shared ownership of the land and for democracy versus, you know, a hate group advocating ethnic cleansing and genocide. Her problem is not that divide. Her problem is much more the messaging. And so she really zeroes in on the fact that the Palestine Solidarity Movement activists wear jeans, they wear t-shirts, graphic tees, they like use the language of human rights, they're very relatable, and they espouse the values that just about anyone would get on board with. And I really, every time I see that article, I think to myself, this is the seed of where she came from. She went there and she said, aha, okay, I have to take that language and take that marketing. I have to be the cute, bubbly Jewish girl wearing jeans and graphic tees and being super relatable in order to market Zionism more effectively.
And you also attended the Palestine Solidarity Conference, albeit recently after returning from a trip to Gaza. Can you tell us a little bit about your time in Gaza and how you experienced the Palestine Solidarity Conference, obviously with your widened perspective that I'm assuming you acquired visiting Gaza?
Thank you so much for the question. And just to clarify, I actually attended the conference the year after Weiss attended, I believe 2005. But nevertheless, I had just come back about a year earlier from living in Gaza for a year and working with the International Solidarity Movement, which is the precursor in many ways to the Freedom Flotilla. When I went to Gaza, living there, let's say, really changed my life and did not only change my views on things. Before I went to Gaza, I had originally gone on the birthright trip and fully intended to become an Israeli citizen, not out of some sort of profound affiliation with Zionism, but because I could get a free education through the free college that they offer all Jewish citizens of Israel and any, you know, Jews wanting to move to Israel and take that citizenship. And, you know, because, of course, like college is really expensive in the U.S., it seemed like a really good financial decision and one that my aforementioned rabbi advocated for. And I didn't really go over knowing a lot about politics. I sort of had a maybe, let's say, a New York Times informed education. And I sort of, you know, thought the Oslo Accords were a really good thing and was just stressed about why can't they all, you know, get along type of mindset. So going to Gaza, of course, you know, I had this friend who went over at the same time to join the International Solidarity Movement and to go to Gaza. And we had just such divergent views. I was being pulled to the right. He was sort of consistently in his views. And he said, look, you know, visit Gaza for a weekend. And I did. And that completely turned everything upside down that I believed was true. Because when you read different sources, you can sort of say this is all an academic argument. But when you're faced with families who are living on the border of Egypt and living under the constant gunfire of Israeli snipers, you know, you can't really turn away. So I ended up staying in Palestine, in Gaza, becoming a human rights activist, joining the International Solidarity Movement. And when I came back, I found that the Jewish community that I had been so much a part of was not actually a community that I could return to. So going to the Palestine Solidarity Movement was in many ways a way to retrieve a community that I had lost, and one that was much more diverse demographically in terms of its views even than the one that I had grown up with.
You're listening to Middle East in Focus on listener-supported KPFK in Los Angeles. I'm Esty Chandler, very happy to be joined today by writer and activist Laura Kraftowitz, who happens to have grown up in the same town with Barry Weiss in Pittsburgh. We often talk about the difference between our coverage of events due to our independence and public as opposed to corporate financial support. But Barry Weiss's hire as the new editor-in-chief of CBS News will paint an even darker picture for mainstream media, with her openly right-wing, anti-woke, pro-Israel, pro-Zionist agenda for rebuilding that network. KPFK is now in our winter fund drive, and it's more important than ever that everyone who cares about and relies on the independence of KPFK to please pick up your phones and dial 818-985-5735. Our number is 818-985-5735, or you can go online at kpfk.org to make a pledge of support and keep Middle East in Focus, Radio Intifada, and all the shows you depend on for accurate information on the air. With a pledge of $120 today to support Middle East in Focus, we can send you as a thank you gift a copy of Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Chris Hedges' most recent book, A Genocide Foretold, which provides an intimate portrait of Israel's systemic oppression, occupation, and violence against Palestinians, and issues a call to action for all to bear witness to this humanitarian crisis. We also have the KPFA, Chris Hedges' digital speech collection, which includes 8 oral presentations by Chris Hedges, including the powerful one he delivered in L.A. this year, A Genocide Foretold, reporting on survival and resistance in occupied Palestine, which we can send you as a gift for a pledge of $100 today to support KPFK. But no donation is too small to make a difference and help keep us on the air and bringing you truly independent voices like that of our guest today, Laura Kraftowitz. Please dial 818-985-5735 or go online at kpfk.org to support Prabhuk Radio in Southern California. Laura, another Barry Weiss project you mentioned in the article, Columbia Unbecoming, is a documentary funded by the AIPAC-adjacent David Project. You described the strategy at the time that Weiss and others, in coordination with Hillel, being that they would attend classes by professors from the Middle East and North African region who criticized Israel to ask antagonizing questions, hoping to bait them into saying something anti-Semitic. Can you talk about how, as you write, quote, while unsuccessful then, we are currently watching similar campaigns bear fruit?
Yeah, of course. So Columbia Unbecoming, just to refresh, was a 40-minute documentary that was marketed as grassroots, but was actually funded by the David Project. The David Project, which was started at Hillel and has since become absorbed by Hillel and is now the Hillel Youth Center for Community Outreach. It was founded by a co-founder of CAMRA, CAMRA being the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting and Analysis, which basically is the media arm of AIPAC or the media equivalent of AIPAC. They do campaigns to issue corrections on things that they don't agree with in reporting on Palestine specifically in order to push the media towards a more pro-Israel bias. And incidentally, since it's in the news, it's worth mentioning that the executive editor of the New York Times, Joseph Kahn, he is the son of Leo Kahn, who was on the board of CAMRA for about 20 years. So with that context, this not-so-grassroots documentary misquoted a number of MENA region professors, portraying them as anti-Semitic. It was dismissed, but not before gathering the support of Michael Bloomberg, of disgraced Congressman Anthony Weiner, and really creating a lot of discord across campus. So since then, of course, we now are in almost the outcome of that with the Trump administration and people like Barry Weiss and all of these organizations, these aligned AIPAC-adjacent organizations coming together to put the focus again on academic freedom in general and specifically in Columbia University, where the student encampments were arguably the most powerful across the nation, and where they were attacked by their administration, and where since then, the Trump administration has worked. And in many ways, it would appear that the trustees have been very happy to go ahead with additionally constraining MENA region professors at the Middle East Studies Department, MELAC, where they are now being put under oversight by a new senior vice provost who basically has ultimate authority over what gets said and what doesn't get said in the classroom. Since then, the esteemed professor Rashid Khalidi, you know, he retired last year. This year, he said that he was supposed to still teach a class, and he said that it would be impossible for him to teach in those circumstances. And so he is now providing a free hybrid course instead, independently. And we've also seen attacks on, you know, many professors.
7 years ago, the mass shooting at Tree of Life tore through both your and Barry Weiss's communities as your congregation was renting space at the synagogue at the time of the shooting. You write, quote, within a year of the shooting, Barry Weiss would publish her rallying cry, How to Fight Anti-Semitism. Among other things, the book would describe the Council on American Islamic Relations, which had raised $200,000 to support Pittsburgh's Jewish community after the shooting, as a Hamas-affiliated anti-Semitic propaganda organization. And you would co-found City of Asylum Detroit, an organization that provides safe haven fellowships to exiled immigrant workers and artists as a way to uplift the social justice work that the shooter wished to erase. So to bring the story full circle in our last couple of minutes, can you tell us about your organization and its newest fellows from Gaza?
Yeah, I won't share names to protect their privacy, but we have two fellows, a couple, an artist and a writer with a young son. They're in exile from Gaza, of course, while their families are still there. And we intended to bring them here. In fact, one of them received an O-1 visa for exceptional talent to come here, which is, you know, extremely hard to get. And that was revoked by the Trump administration days before they were set to travel. So we decided that we were not going to abandon them simply because our government wouldn't let them come here. And we have continued our commitment to them and getting them to safety while uplifting their art and their writing.
That's lovely. And will you be publishing the writing, helping them get published?
Yeah, that's part of what we do. So we are facilitating collaborations between them and artists here. We've done some translation of the writer, half of the couple, and are going to be putting that out. And the artist is involved in a collaboration with an artist professor here at the University of Michigan. And we're working on some further projects as well.
Laura, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with us today and share about your writing and your project. In her first month at CBS News, Barry Weiss fired dozens of longtime CBS reporters and anchors, with more firings expected. One high-profile exit following the firings came with the resignation of CBS Evening News anchor John Dickerson, who had worked at CBS for 16 years. Weiss, who has described herself as a quote-unquote Zionist fanatic, did intervene to save the job of one foreign correspondent, Chris Livesay, who appealed directly to Weiss, complaining of being sidelined because of his strong support for Israel. Weiss responded by replacing Livesay on the firing list with Deborah Pata, a 12-year CBS veteran, reportedly just hours before the cuts were finalized. Her purge has seen 8 on-air women, including several women of color, dismissed from the network, according to reporting at The Independent. There are countless things we don't know about what the future will bring. But one thing we know for sure is that we all need KPFK's independent programming and critical analysis of events. This is the place so many of us come to hear from scientists, journalists, artists, academics, public intellectuals, writers, and activists like our guest today, Laura Krafcovic. Now more than ever, we need our community to band together to keep each other safe and informed. We need our radio station, KPFK, to continue to widely communicate with one another and understand what is happening in the world around us, because we are all interconnected. Please help us continue doing what we do best, programming, informing, and entertaining, by calling 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. 5735 or log on to kpfk.org to donate whatever you can afford. No donation is too small. If you appreciate our programming, if you rely on our independent reporting, if our music and cultural shows get you through your days, please grab your phone now to make a pledge. Our number again is 818-985-5735 or simply go online to contribute at kpfk.org. Help us to keep Middle East in Focus, Radio Intifada, Reggae Central, and all your favorite KPFK shows on the air. The Trump administration and Project 2025 are clear about their desires to dismantle civil society organizations and public media outlets, which have long been targets of the far right, who famously prefer alternative facts. KPFK belongs to all of us. The station belongs to this community who funds, contributes content, and interacts with our shows. We all need this community more than ever to help us cull through the barrage of distractions and disinformation being thrown at us, aiming to make us feel dejected and powerless. This community has kept Middle East in Focus on the air for over 40 years and KPFK alive for 75 years. I'm asking you to help us remain on the air at this crucial time by making a contribution online at kpfk.org or by dialing 818-985-5735 to keep us broadcasting. Once again, I want to thank our guest, writer and activist, Laura Kraftowitz. You can read her piece, Progressive Except for Palestine, on growing up in Barry Weiss's urban shtetl at Literary Hub. I also want to thank Mark Maxwell for his production support today. For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Esty Chandler, thanking you for your continued support of KPFK and for taking this time to put the Middle East in focus.
Thank you, Esty.
My name's Philip, and I've been listening to KPFK for probably 40 years or so. One of my favorite programs is Background Briefing, and I'm glad he's back on air there. I heard some things that I didn't always agree with, but I like the Tom Hartman show. And I think it's a great station and really needs more support in these days when independent radio is under attack.
For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Negwa Ibrahim. I just wanted to take a moment to talk with you all about the fund drive that we're in right now for KPFK. As you know, we are 100% community sponsored. We take no money from any sort of corporate entities. That gives us the opportunity to really talk about the issues that are affecting the world from a place of truth, and not from a place that's influenced by corporate greed, that's influenced by ulterior motives. Rather, we have the opportunity through being community funded, through listener support, to really be able to deliver programming that is speaking truth to power. And we want to be able to continue to do that. You can make your pledge to kpfk.org/donate. Or you can call in at 818-985-5735. If you appreciate what we are about and what we're trying to do every day in collaboration with you all, please make sure to donate. Once again, you can donate at kpfk.org/donate or call in at 818-985-5735. Thanks so much for joining us. Wishing you all light, love, and peace. Stay tuned.
Greetings.
I'm Chuck Foster, host of Reggae Central, right here on KPFK. Join me Sunday afternoons from 2 to 5 for 3 hours of the best in ska, rocksteady, roots and culture, dub and dancehall, from the foundational Jamaican recordings to the latest international releases. That's Reggae Central, 2 to 5 p.m. every Sunday, right here on KPFK.